Yo, so I made it to 52. Today is January 19th, 2012. And it does mark the day that I came forward onto planet Earth 52 years ago. Today. And Happy still ain't no friend of mine. Sister Tanya acknowledges in her tune, Cherry Brandy. Or was it Cherry Brandy? This is Happy Ain't No Friend of Mine. I believe so. I don't know. Anyway, it's true for me. Happy still ain't no friend of mine. When I came forward on January 19th, 1960, or rather when I was forced out of my mama's womb, on that day in his story, and there was two of them who pushed me out, positioned me, and then pushed me out, and I was not happy. I came out crying, wailing, flailing, and screaming, and it was, I do not suppose, a very happy experience, and Happy still ain't no friend of mine. Just for today, I must be honest and truthful and say that that is the case. This story, his story, has taught me that happiness is, we have a choice in some way to be happy or not, that we are responsible ultimately for our state of happiness or not. And so it's like, well, if happy is no friend of mine and I'm responsible for being happy, then it's something that I'm doing that's created my state of unhappiness. And I have also found his story to be fraught and filled with lies. And then all kinds of lies, and they have many different types of lies, I believe. You have the pathological liar, you have the little white lie, you have the, they're justified lies, I don't know what you call them, when it's kind of like acceptable and justified, yes, everybody would tell it that lie in order, you know, I don't know what to call them kind of lies, yet I trust if I think through and meditate on this thing a little bit more, I will come up with more of the cliches, the memes, the slogans that support lying. Yet, it's clear for me that his story has been fraught with lies. And as I overlay that with my state of happiness and who's responsible and or not, and what I certainly see here and work to talk about is the fact that a problem that I've noted is that the he of his story is and has been sitting on me, so to speak, or riding my ass. And that is, you know, when I trace the source of my unhappiness and look at the whole picture, what I find is, in fact, that my unhappiness and my inability to make myself happy is directly related to he, him, and that he, him has been sitting, they ask. Like, oh, no, here go the problem. Wait a minute. It was kind of, you know how that kind of simple problem you've been looking for, you've been attempting to fix something, repair something, get it to work. It's like, well, just can't, I don't understand. This doesn't make no sense. You know, I've done this, I've done that, I've done that, and it's supposed to work. What the hell? And then he's like, oh, man, there, I didn't push this thing here. And it's similar to my life. It's like, you know, I've done all this work to sort of make myself happy, and it's like, You've been riding on my ass. Wait a minute, get up. Get the hell up out of the way so I can go on, you know? And then you do more of the same. And you begin to lie and say to me that either you're not really sitting on me and riding me, or you are, yet it's justified because of this, this, and that. And you lie and you say other people are being ridden and they're not having a problem with it. It's only you. It's like maybe because other people didn't like search and find the little simple answer right here that I did. Is that possible? Of course it is. Those of you who are under the sound or listening to the sound of my voice, I suspect have also come to know that that is true for you too. Yet, that is my testament and the one that I should want folk to remember about me. My iPod is having some issues. It's been dropped one too many times, and now it just kind of switches shit at will. It's kind of similar to what happened to me and why, if you will, one of the reasons that I am unhappy is I've been, you know, I tend to go off on a tangent and switch gears, and this is connected to that, and that's connected to that, and I begin to spill it all out, and from a scholarly standpoint, that's not appropriate, that's not acceptable, that's not the standard, therefore it's unacceptable, and if and when you do that, that gives us the cause to ignore you, despite the fact that what you are saying is valid and or true. Because you have not said it in the way that we have determined it's supposed to be said, then it does not count. And we can ignore you, and everyone else has been programmed to think and behave in that very same way. And as a result, everybody ignores me. And I didn't have anything to do with dropping my ass and breaking me apart from myself as an African descendant. And putting, you know, it's like you kind of transported me to a false story, a false cultural reality, and then hold me accountable for having difficulty with living up to being you, when in fact I am me, Mama Earth, a woman of African descent, not a ED European descendant. How dare you? That is the root of black bastardly behavior as well. That type of thinking and behaving that is representative of what I have called black bastardly behavior. Some foul shit. Yeah, Ginger's up on the rise, yo. Ginger's in the house right now. We're gonna switch in energies and switch in personalities. Yeah, that was my child who was just speaking to you. And now this is me, Mama Earth. And I didn't teach my child to be nice, nasty, but to be nice in the nastiness. Say what you mean what you say, and say it in a nice way. So her way of saying to you that you know, it's the behaviors and the black bastardly behaviors In reality, when you flip the script on shit as it is appropriate for us to do when we are working a program of recovery. And when you flip the script, and when I flip the script on what she is referring to as black bastardly behaviors, what I see is some cracker motherfucking shit. That particular way of thinking and behaving, in fact, has not a thing to do with anything black. And blacks as a people are not the bastards, spiritually speaking. In fact, it is cracker shit. Yeah, I think a cracker shit is like when a person or animal shits, and that shit, the color, the consistency is outside of the norm. They'll be like, oh, what the hell? That's a cracker shit. It's similar to what we understand and know about the stories of fucking crackers coming on the planet in their incomplete state, white skinned. And we understand it was kind of weird when black people come out white skinned, they call it albinoism. And that even some white children or cracker children come out with even less amounts of melanin, I suppose, and they become, quote unquote, albino. You know, I believe crackers, y'all have the little teeny bit of melanin that you do, because we do hail from the same spirit of Ama. Ama. However, you, Urugu, left Ama without getting complete. But yet, because you come from Ama, you still got a touch of melanin. Yet when crackers come forward and they've even lost that, maybe that's what they're albino. But we understand that when it comes out, kind of like, weird. Wait a minute. That's some wacky shit, right? Something wrong with that shit right there. What happened? What happened to you? You go fix that shit. Yet Urugu refused to go back to Ama to fix that shit until we've been living this. And they, therefore, spiritually speaking, become bastards because they have not the female energy. Man, these people have twisted shit up so much up in this camp. Well, how can, it's like, do you hear all these little pieces and shit all connected up? So, you know, at this point, we're going to take us a break. You know, I'm going to give you them back over to Abana. And I say, as Abana, this has been another episode in Abana's World. On this, my solar return, Earth Day, the day I came to Earth, the people, all of what we characterize and classify it as is what I experience myself as being. And it being for me. Yes, it is that, and it's all of that, and a bag of chips. So, till next time. Coming to you from the recovery room of racism. Non-anonymous, because racism in the lives of African descendants is not a secret.
Climb all the way up to the top floor, but you can't even get up the guts to jump. No, cherry brandy, pumping a real handy vodka.
Messages in the music for sure. What are you going through? I'll be your friend. As a therapist of African descent that I am a tad bit touched, if you will. And that's okay, because that may let you know that I am therefore in a position to empathize with you, because I share the losses. that you have shared as well. That is, if you are able to see through the European shit, the whiteout, and to be able to truly see me. Yet, in order to truly see the earth, Mother Earth, we do have to clean up the shit that's been dumped all over it, right? To get see clearly now. And you may need to clean up the European shit in your mind, those memes and their cultural way of thinking and behaving in the world. And push that shit aside and you can be able to see me clear. And I'm going to give you experiences and examples in my life and my interactions with you. Many of you other folks of African descent out there in the world. And I could be real specific about the African descendants whom I have had direct contact and interaction with, and share the stories and of the terrible event that I experienced in those interactions and relationships, and what sort of makes them terrible events in my life is that the interactions were not based in Ma'at and Ma'atic harmony and Ma'atic practice that we are. It wasn't like that. And that was a terrible Ma'afa, terrible Ma'afa, terrible event that the interactions and relational dynamics that I have experienced with other African descendants, especially those who have professed and proposed that they too were fully conscious of self and that they too had recovered ability to be African. And the terrible event was the way they demonstrated that. It's like, this is not Ma'at. What the hell is this? Yo, ho, wait a minute. And when I stopped to ask some questions, they turned around and slung some more shit, sugar-coated shit, or shit-coated with sugar, something in my face. And ran off and told you a pack of flipping lies about me. One example is a brother named Jakuma. Goes by the avatar name of Jakuma, runs asadasakor.org, and that was sort of the first quote-unquote conscious community of African descendants that I had come in contact with. Again, a place and a person who presented themselves as having recovered their ability to be African, and that they valued, supported, encouraged, and promoted that for other African descendants. Yet, their behaviors and interactions, it's like, what the hell is this? Yo, wait a minute, brother. And then the terrible shit that happened for me, it's like, whoa. Yo, so I have to remember and tell the truth about terrible events. And it's not a flip-flopping secret, this thing called racism. And understand that racism, in a nutshell, simplified form in terms of what it is and how it works, it is a system that is designed to cause harm to African descendants. How it works is that people think and behave in a particular way about African descendants, and that way of thinking and behavior is one which promotes and supports causing them intentional harm and justifying the causing of that harm. That's like justifying the lie stuff, right? Supporting the lie. That is what I have found. People have lied to themselves about me. For example, Uma shared with other people that I used crack cocaine. I was a crack addict. That was the first thing he said to people. And what the impression that the people got was, oh, wow, this sister, she hooked on crack. What the lie is, and what Jakuma knows is a lie, because what I did say to him several times, him and a whole community, that I used crack for all of 6 months of my life when it first hit our communities in 1986. Based on my recent events and progress with sharing me with thee And as I went through that process and looked at those images and pictures, it's like, you know what? And see how Jakuma lie? I kick cracks in the fucking ass. Like, people say they beat breast cancer, and they beat this guy of cancer, and they kicked it in the butt. And the heart attack, I kick cracks fucking ass. This shit came out in 1986 in our hoods. And I got caught up for all of 6 months. And then I began to get myself together in 87 and ain't look back. I kick crack ass. And you know how many people in my generation still fucking out there hooked on crack? They hooked on crack, they got their kids and their damn grandkids. Slinging it and everything. I kick crack in the fucking ass 6 months in my life. And it was 6 months with the whole cocaine thing, period. It started off with, because 10 months, by October 86, I was well on my, started down the path of recovery by October. I was introduced to the shit in January of 86. I used it, I didn't even smoke it. I was introduced to smoking in January 86. And then I just began to snort up until June, the end of June, where I was like, okay, I got to get some fucking help. This shit got to get a grip. So that was, 6 months? And that was just with snorting cocaine mostly. You know, experimenting, partying, friends, you know, working full-time. What? I'm 26. Turned 26 in 86, and my birthday, was introduced to smoking cocaine. Freebasing is what I knew it as then. And that's the only thing. I said, like, ooh, y'all, freebasing. And I did it, and I saw the power. I experienced the power of this shit, the potency. It's like, oh, this shit is too good. I told myself that night, this is too good. I can't do this again. I can't fuck with this shit because this feels too fucking good. And I didn't smoke it again until probably August of that year. Yet, I didn't smoke it after January, but I did begin to snort from February to about June. You know. Off and on, not daily, but, you know, because I'm working full-time and you go out on the weekends with your girlfriends and you got your little champagne and your drinks and people snorted coke. That was the thing. But by June, I'm like, okay, wait a minute, this shit's getting to be a problem because I'm robbing Peter to pay Paul and, we got to get a grip up in this camp. This is not the way my life was supposed to go. And so I took myself to treatment. Never mind. I believe I had begun therapy. I was seeing my therapist when I was sort of introduced to the cocaine. Yeah, I started therapy in 85. Because I had my first sort of passive suicide attempt was in 85. I was 25. And that's when I started seeing my black therapist, psychologist that I identified. I heard an advertisement. I picked up the phone and made the call and made the connection. And that was towards the end, that was October 85. And January 86, my birthday, introduced me, family, we having fun and playing. And, you know, this brings me to June of 86, where I was like, okay, I got to get a grip. So I went into a treatment program to get a grip. And in the treatment program, it was co-ed. And there was a man there, a brother, who was working to get off of crack. And I didn't know anything about smoking it, but I had no foundational knowledge of what his experience was smoking. Yet many people, my primary drug of choice at that point was marijuana when I first went into treatment program. And as we begin to define and uncover based on time and blah, 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 substances, what it turns out is my primary drug of choice at that point was truly marijuana. Cocaine was just something I had just been introduced to. But for me, it was cocaine that said, yo, get your ass and get some help. It wasn't because of marijuana. That didn't cause a problem. It was that cocaine that caused a problem, and that's where I took myself into treatment for. And I met the brothers and different people, but I met the one brother in particular. And how much do I want to tell now? I think I'll just tell this part. I'm not going to go deeper for now with that. Yeah, in the treatment program, I met a dick. That's what it was. And it was a pretty powerful dick that I then became addicted to. And so I got addicted to the dick in the treatment program. And when I came out the treatment program, the dick was attached to a body and a person who had been smoking crack cocaine for some time. And he introduced me to crack cocaine, or reintroduced me to the smoking of it. That's what happened. Now, and I told it. Yet what happened is, after we got out of treatment, we kind of hooked up some more, and he introduced me to what is truly known now as crack cocaine. And he introduced me as well to what happens when you do that shit. Because I'm looking at him, and it's like, okay, this is going to be a fucking problem. I don't want to get like that yet. And at the same time, that shit was very good. It was very powerful. It was just like that first experience when I knew that this shit felt too good. You know, I felt that again. And so that was from August, and that went on for me till October, because by October, it was like, oh, no, I had gone really bad, you know, because my family members, siblings were also doing it. You know, I left the dude alone after a really hot minute, yet it was enough that I had gotten the taste of use of crack and the effects, the benefit, the beneficial, what drew people to it. Because for, when you've been depressed and oppressed, and you get a stimulant that gives you that type of boost of energy, you want that shit all the time. And you will do whatever the hell it takes by any means necessary. Well, for me, one of the means that had become necessary was to sell half my goddamn belongings, and up to and including my car. And when I sold my car and my brother helped me sell it, that's when I was like, okay, we gotta go get some fucking help. This shit ain't gonna work. Yeah, got nothing else to sell. I guess I never considered selling my body. It was never even crossed my mind, interestingly enough. Interesting. Damn. Woo! I have to tell y'all another step about that a little later, too. But, whoo! Never crossed my mind. And so what it did cross my mind was to go get some fucking help and get up out of this shit. That's what crossed my mind, and that's what I did. So in October of 86, I, again, took myself to fucking treatment, and was diagnosed with depression. I was suicidal, and you know, I began to learn about PTSD and depression. And then from that point on, October 85, I was connected with the Jefferson Evening Program for outpatient services, and then the rest sort of became her story, my story. My story towards working to obtain and live the happy life. Yes.
I've been standing no friend of mine.